Welcome to the Power User Podcast, where we discuss topics of interest to tech power users, brought to you by NeoWin.net and WinCustomize.com. In this segment, we're talking about some hot topics in the news. Joining me today is Joshua Maddock, an OSX expert, Todd Tanner, NeoWin game and news poster, Derek Batting, a NeoWin site editor, and Brad Wardell of Stardock Corporation, regular contributor to Power User Podcast. Hi, gang.
Hey.
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 There's a lot of us in here today, so maybe before we speak, we can all identify ourselves. I'm just going to assume everybody knows I'm the girl. Hopefully I don't sound too much like a guy. The first topic we want to talk about, OSX in the wild. OSX is out there now on BitTorrent. Who's going to tell me about that?
I guess I will.
Okay, is this Josh?
Yes, this is Josh.
Okay.
I have personally installed it on an AMD Sempron. Did not have much trouble with the transition from an image going onto a hard drive partition, and the only thing you need to do was go into BIOS and change the partition. Runs fast. Of course, this isn't an SSE3 optimized processor, so I have yet to be able to run iTunes, but it seems that the amount of people out there who are willing to hack it to be able to make it run on other things will soon change that.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. I mean, all these years I've been told that the PowerPC is way better, and I bought into it back in the early 90s, but sure enough, OS X starts being made for Intel, and you know, where Apple wants it to only run on their hardware, and it's not even out in public beta, and it's already available to run on your Dell or Gateway.
Yeah, it'll actually run better on your Dell than it'll run on the developer machines that are out there. More people are having better experience on Dells, having more supported options than others, and it runs faster than I have ever used an Apple.
So the story here is that OS X 86 has been leaked to the BitTorrent sites. Not for the first time, of course.
It's been leaked onto BitTorrent and then packed so that it'll run on the non-Apple developer platform. So Apple made their own specific Intel-based machine that they had originally made OS X only able to run on, and then someone got a hold of that, modified it so it'll run on a Dell or Gateway or some homemade box. And it runs, not only does it run well, but apparently runs better, according to what Todd was saying. It runs better than it does on the Apple machine.
So I imagine Apple is not feeling too happy about that at this point.
Well, I assume a person with a similar developer setup, they made a VMware image of it. And that is what people are using to put it on different machines, like different AMDs or what have you. But the problem seems to be is on certain AMD 64-bit processors, there seems to be a memory leak caused by Rosetta, which is causing very slow machines. So that is about the only problem that some people have experienced.
But what software is coming with the OS X build? What have you got to play around with?
Everything except for iTunes, DVD player. Otherwise, you just, if you have a PowerPC, you make your universal binaries, and you can copy and write over, or you can use Colloquy, Xbench, amongst others. There's even a Firefox universal binary now.
Well,
it's actually interesting to see how well OS X runs on something other than the developer hardware.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Joshua. All right.
No problem.
Our next topic, actually also of interest, Joe Wood cans Stargate, the game. So Joe Wood has announced that Perception, the Australian developer that's been working on Stargate SG-1, the Alliance, has been pulled off the title. And they're planning a full review of the project. Who's up on that topic?
I am, Todd Tanner. He's poster extraordinaire.
Hi, Todd. So
how
what have
doing?
You got to tell us about it?
Well, this is quite an interesting topic, actually. From what I can tell, there's two sides here. You have Joe Wood, the publisher, saying that apparently the title didn't meet their quality standards, and they were pretty much terminating the the ability of the developer to make the game. And then you have Perception, which is the developer, saying that Joe Wood was in fact in breach of contract from some legal standpoint, which they didn't make clear, and also for some sort of monetary standpoint for other things that they've done for them in the past, and that Perception actually terminated, or was going to terminate on August 5th, I believe it was, the their contract with Joe Wood. So not quite sure what's going on there. It's quite interesting, actually. I won't get into too much detail about anything specific, but I will say that Joe Wood, if anyone knows from the forums, I'm not too keen on Joe Wood. They don't have a very well-known track record, I suppose.
Have a track record.
Yes. See, Brad knows. They said that the title didn't meet their quality standards, and the only game I'm going to mention here is Soldner. Okay, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
When it comes to quality, okay, Soldner to me was a decent game. Don't get me wrong, but it was rushed out and was not ready. So by them saying that the Stargate game didn't meet their quality standards, I'm thinking here that I think Joe Wood knew that Perception wasn't happy what was going on, and Perception jumped the gun, and then Joe Wood just went ahead and did this big announcement, and now it's a whole big mess.
It is a big mess, actually, because Joe Wood is now being accused of libel by the developer.
Perception, yes.
Yes.
And, in fact, Perception, in their press release the other day, said that it is them, not Joe Wood, who actually holds the copyright, I suppose, to
the franchise rights
from MGM to make the game, and that they will continue to develop the game, and Joe Wood really has no stake here, according to them.
Wow, that is a very tangled mess, because you have an Australian developer, and Joe Wood, I believe, is located in, what, Germany?
Yes, they're in Germany, I believe.
And
I have to check that.
Yeah, every time I go to E3, because I remember I first encountered Joe Wood when I was at E3, and they had, like, a traffic simulation game. And I don't remember the title of that.
I don't remember the name of that either, but yeah, I remember that.
And then they had a game that they had some business games for a while. But yeah, this is clearly, I mean, whoa, that's going out and accusing your developer in a public statement.
Right.
That, I mean, right. Wow.
That's a big step.
It is a big thing because most publishers, if they're not happy with a developer's progress on a game, won't go public and say, hey, you guys suck and we're terminating your contract. That's usually not how it's done.
Exactly. They usually just say they will terminate and just say the project's been abandoned and they don't comment on the reasons. But for a publisher, particularly, and I don't want to, you know, as a game developer slash publisher, I don't want to be bashing anyone, but for Joe Wood to say, well, we just don't have confidence in someone's, you know, ability to get out a quality product, that's really saying a lot.
Now, see, the thing that I find interesting as I'm reading one of the websites here is that Namco is actually going to be publishing the game in North America and actually not just North America, apparently, that Joe Wood was only handling the European publication and not worldwide. So I don't know, it could be several things going on here when it comes to the development and publishing of the title.
And there's a lot of legal liability that Joe Wood brought on themselves by making a public statement. I mean, maybe the game totally sucks. I mean, but they should never have said anything like that, because if they don't have the full rights to the game, then it could be demonstrated that they could have damaged sales in other markets, especially if they're just a European publisher.
And damaged the reputation and Perception, of course.
Exactly.
Which is a big deal, which is a very big deal.
A big deal, and it's also, you know, the basis of, I'm sure, further legal action on behalf of the developer.
Yes.
Exactly. Has Perception made any other games?
I have to check that. I haven't really heard of them before this, so I'm not really quite sure if they've done any other games that I've...
Because that would be an interesting follow-up for us, would be to find out. You know, if these guys have made some excellent games in the past, that makes it even more troubling.
That's interesting. We're going to have to keep on top of that and see what happens next.
Yes.
But in further news, we have Google and CNET stopped talking to each other, or maybe I should just say that Google has stopped talking to CNET, full stop. There's a lot of information that can be found about people just by Googling their names, and so somebody from CNET Googled an executive over at Google. And
basically,
learn all kinds of information.
CNET, more information than apparently Google's CEO Eric Schmidt was willing to release just by using Google itself. Eleanor Mills in the July 14th story on news.com spent about 30 minutes on Google and found out way more than I'm sure Google CEO Eric Schmidt would have wanted, and went on to publish it in the story, which is basically what caused the whole debacle in the first place.
Well, essentially, CNET did a story on Google. And in the course of it, they covered a lot of things about their chief executive officer, and some of that apparently was quite sensitive that Google was pretty unhappy about.
It included the executive officer's net worth and the town that he lived in and how much he stood to gain from selling his Google stock this year. That kind of information.
His political party affiliation.
His hobbies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, see, and I don't know, that's a tough call. I mean, this is the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar public corporation. Is he fair game to be talking about his personal life? I certainly know, if you want to go on to Google, you can find out pretty much where I live and all that kind of thing, and I wouldn't be comfortable with CNET or any other outfit doing that. Simply because they can look it up on the net doesn't make it
fair
ethical.
Game for them to publish.
Yeah, but on the other hand, Google is a public company, so it's a little bit different. But I certainly wouldn't want to, you know, my political affiliation is obviously very close-kept secret. No one can tell that
nobody knows that you're actually a communist, right?
Right. You know, my communist sympathies are very, you know, well-hidden fact.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think there's a line to be drawn in terms of, you know, it's a public company, so maybe this CEO's net worth and maybe, you know, the worth of his stock in the company is something that's, you know, out there and publicly available. But there's also sort of a moral line that journalists need to draw, saying, you know, we don't need to tell everybody where this guy lives or, you know, what he does necessarily in his spare time unless he's given us permission. I mean, what is the purpose of that? And really the purpose of the article seemed to be just to show how much information you could find by Googling people.
Yeah, we reserve that kind of violation of privacy to Supreme Court justices who rule on topics we don't like.
Right, right. So Google's response to that has been to cut off communications with CNET. They simply don't respond anymore. For 1 year, for a period of 1 year, which is kind of interesting. And, you know, I don't know exactly how I feel about that.
Actually, Google is much more powerful than I think a lot of people give credit. Google could pretty much crush almost any company, and I say that as, you know, my lords and masters at Google, and I don't want to say anything that gets them mad.
Right.
But if they took you out of their search engine, they simply made it so that anything with your domains don't show up. Man, talk about, I mean, both
Being
WinCustomize and mm-hmm. NeilWin.net get a tremendous number of visitors each day because of Google searches. And if Google chose to cut someone off, you know, which I'm sure they wouldn't because they're the most wonderful company in the world and we worship them as
yes,
our God.
Of course.
That they could really, they have a lot. I wonder who's scarier at this point, Microsoft or Google?
Google holds about 50% of the market share in the search circles. And I'm sure that intimidates Microsoft to no end. But on the software side of things, Microsoft's pretty much it. And however hard they try to gain some of the footing in the search arena, it just looks like it's just simply not going to happen.
Well, in the meantime, we can continue to kiss up the both of them.
Right. Well, and we will, and undoubtedly we will. All right. Next topic: Quake 3 source put out there. Who's the game?
I'll tell that one.
Okay.
So John Carmack, in charge over at ID or ID Software, however you want to pronounce it, has put out the Quake 3 source code under GPL. And he has said that he would like to see someone, not him, but someone, make an open source game. You know, with it. I've made this really cool shooter, and here's the source code to it right there.
Just to clarify, so people listening don't misunderstand, they're not releasing everything. It's just the source code to the engine. Textures, maps, sounds, none of that is included. Or will be included. It's not actually released yet. It's going to be released sometime this week. So any mod or developer or anybody using the source code for the engine would actually have to create all their own assets for whatever game they're going to make.
Carmack had an interesting criticism of other companies that keep their source code guarded. And I think it was a shot at Valve, but I mean, I don't know that, but that was what I read between the lines, that saying, look at these other companies that keep their source code close to them, and let's face it, they got most of their source code concepts from us. I believe, I could be mistaken, that Half-Life 1 used the Quake 2 or 3, I think it was
Quake 1 and 2, actually.
Right.
Quake 1 and 2.
They had that, and so they learned most of their techniques, one might argue, or a good portion of them, from id's software, or id's engine in the begin with, and I think that's what they're referring to.
Well, not to just, you know, say anything bad about what you said, of course, but I personally believe that they were taking a stab at Epic, to be honest. I think that they really wanted to say that and say, hey, look, you know, you got the Quake series engine, which has, you know, been around since, what, 96 or so? And you got
each game now. To put their source out there.
Yeah. They've had a Quake series engine's been around since 96. You've had three huge games, and a fourth, of course, coming up now. And you got each one now has had their source code released, okay? Epic, on the other hand, has never released any of their source code or anything for their games. I mean, they've had that, you know, the make something unreal thing where they give you a license to the engine to use, but they've never released any source or anything for people to play around with.
I think that's a good point. You know, and maybe John Carmack was meant it in a pretty broad sense. He might be, you know, kill a bunch of birds with one stone.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you said, you thought it was Valve and I thought it was Epic. To be honest, it could have been nothing. He was just saying that in general.
Right. Now, so, on the other hand, it's one thing to release... one of the things he said that I found really interesting, and I mean, as a game developer, I mean, I consider the engine only a small part of the overall product. I mean, for GLaDOS Civilizations 2 we're working on, I mean, the engine's an important... the 3D engine's an important part of it, but it's not the whole thing. I couldn't even imagine spending 18 months of my life coding something, the entire game, and then releasing the entire thing as GPL. And
right.
What he's saying is that he wants to see someone actually make a game using that engine and then release the entire game under GPL. And I object. I mean, as a commercial, if someone else wants to do that, that's, you know, great for them. But I mean, and I think it's incredibly generous of it to release their source code for their engines like they do. I think it's really fantastic for game developers. But at the same time, like you mentioned, it's not releasing the source code of their games. It's not like they've released a Doom 3, you know, source code incomplete with all the textures and that sort of thing. And it seems like he's almost suggesting that someone, well, it's not just suggesting, he's saying he wants to see someone make an entire game that uses his engine and release the entire game as open source. And that's, to me, that just sounds, that's crazy. And I mean,
well,
I would never do that.
Well, you gotta look at it from his point of view, though. You see, that you're talking about the man that made, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people would agree, 3D gaming on the PC. Okay?
I agree with that.
You have a man who's created practically every major engine for almost every major game, well, at least first-person shooter-wise, for the last nearly 10 years, literally, or plus 10 years. You have each engine iteration has been released source code-wise years after the game no longer sells and the engine is no longer viable for them to sell. Quake 3 was released in, I think it was late 98 or early 99, if I remember correctly. They're no longer licensing the engine to developers to make any games with it. So their point of view is, hey, we released Quake 1 and Quake 2 source, let's release the Quake 3 engine source for people to use. And John Carmack is, I think, simply saying that, hey, you know, I would love to see someone take my source code to the Quake 3 engine and make an entire game out of it, with their own assets, of course, and then release that game on the market and just have the source code on the CD so it's GPL'd, and hey, there you go. That's your game.
Oh,
I'm not
agree.
Saying...
I agree. I understand, but I'm just saying, in my mind, the engine, to use an operating system analogy, the 3D engine is like the kernel of an operating system.
Right.
And while Linux, obviously, is a great example of where someone made the kernel and other people made all the supporting files and released the entire thing as source, so there is a example of that, it's... the 3D engine itself is really just such a, it's not the whole thing. And I mean, if, you know, a 3D engine, let's say it's 50 or 100,000 lines of code, the rest of the game may be another million lines of code. And I couldn't imagine releasing all that all because I got a... And I hate not to be... Again, writing a 3D engine in 2005 from scratch using DirectX 9 is not that difficult. I mean, you're talking a few months of work. So, I mean, his contribution today is... I mean, like I said, John Carmack, he invented the first-person shooter. I mean, I have nothing but the highest regard for him, but I just don't... I would just never... I just don't see game developers putting together significant size games with it and then releasing it as GPL because it's very expensive to make that kind of thing.
But you see, that's what I'm trying to say, though. So you got the source and the assets of the game are two completely different things. You got the engine which runs it, like you said, it's like the OS or the kernel, which is the basis of any game. But then you have all the heart and then the guts of a game, say like Doom 3, right? If they release the source in, say... 5 years or whatever. If they release the textures and the music and the maps and the WADs and all the other stuff that's involved in it, then I can see you saying, hey, you know, that's a cheap way into another company and that's kind of cheapening the gaming industry.
No, I'm not sure I understand. I mean, my understanding from what he said was that he'd like to see everything. Here's the game and here's all the sources, an open source game, which would include the textures and all the other assets in the game, and of course all the other code that's been added to make the game happen. And, I could be misunderstanding what he's saying.
No, all they're releasing is the source code to the engine. There's
I know what it's releasing. I'm talking about what John Carmack is saying. He's saying he'd like to see someone else release a game in which the entire source code is on the CD. And so when I take that to say, as a game developer, I read that as saying, all right, I take his engine, which is GPL. Everything else I add to it would be, under the same license. I would release everything with it. It's very hard to, make a whole game. And he is talking about the whole game, not just releasing the engine for the third party and not include those textures in that. Because it won't even run.
Well, that's the GPL thing. They have to. They have no choice.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Releasing an engine is very generous, but... It's as part of a game. It's only a very small part of an overall modern game.
But in general, if some third party made a game using the source for the Quake 3 engine, they don't have to include the textures and the music and everything. Only the modified source that they use to make the game and then put that on the CD. They don't have to include the textures and everything.
Right. I understand that. I understand the GPL license. What I'm saying is, from my reading of what John Carmack said, and maybe he'll clarify that, or maybe there are clarifications already, what my reading into it is he would like to see, here's the game, and here's the complete source for how the game was made. And, I could be, like I said, I could be misreading it, but that's how I took it.
Right. No, I understand.
Well, lively debate, fellows. It sounds like we could almost make an entire episode out of this one topic, but we should
definitely look at following this up sometimes, see if we find out more, because the source code hasn't been released, and no one's asked John if what exactly he'd imagine seeing on a CD. Is he just looking for someone takes the Quake 3 source, updates it, adds some extra stuff to it, and releases that, or are they meaning the entire project file, basically, if I brought it into VisualStudio.net and I simply put on the entire source code tree and release all that along with the other files that are part of my source code tree, which includes, in our case, when we develop games, the assets.
That would be definitely something that I think people would be interested in knowing more about. Our last topic, though, Microsoft and Apple over a patent disagreement regarding the iPod.
As everyone knows, Apple has made the iPod, and of course, nowadays, everyone patents everything. And Apple recently found their patent on the user interface for the iPod rejected because it turns out Microsoft was actually in the process of trying to make something similar. Maybe not for as a marketable consumer product, but they were researching the same kinds of technologies and had patented the same sort of thing themselves before Apple, apparently, and that caused the Patent Office to reject Apple's application.
Right, so apparently Apple created the iPod and actually got it to market before Microsoft was able to do that, but Microsoft had already had it in development and had patents on a similar user interface. So that's really where the disagreement comes in. It seems like Apple, from the consumer perspective, it might seem like Apple was first, but the paper trail says that Microsoft actually might have been first. Is that correct, Brad?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've heard grumblings for a couple years from people at Microsoft that are more familiar with this, and I didn't really pay much attention, but now I'm starting to pay more attention, that Apple was actually working on something similar to this, and they just basically got beat to the punch. I've been hearing from contacts at Microsoft for years some grumblings about the iPod on how Microsoft was working on something long before, everything down to the, you know, using the removable hard drives, and even IBM was working on something similar, but I didn't really pay that much attention to it until now. Now I'm paying attention to
it because
of the patent, but I guess Microsoft was researching a lot of the software on that, and I do know from talking to people at IBM, IBM was working on an iPod-like device as well, but they just never got it to market, and now the two are just battling it out over that sort of thing. In fact, Microsoft last Friday said that their policy is they will allow others to license their patents, but they want it to be licensed.
Right, which means that Apple would have to send Microsoft a check on, you know, any iPods sold if it's determined that they actually do have overlapping technology.
It would also be worth noting that how often has this happened where another company has came up with a similar design? And in this case, especially with Microsoft, over the years we've seen this same debate happen, although not for user interface for iPod, but with technologies like WinFS and Spotlight. People have said that ever since way back in Microsoft's time, Microsoft has been first with that, but Apple says they've been first. We've seen this debate happen a lot.
Yeah, and one of the things, I mean, I know, like I said, I have more contacts at Microsoft than Apple in the sense that I have some at Microsoft and none at Apple. But I've heard Microsoft people say, you know, Apple comes to market with this stuff first, but oftentimes they've lifted it, and they've claimed that Apple lifted it from them, or that's the, you know, the rumor anyway. And whether that be on the search feature that they said, there's the... you know, even Apple admitted the fast user switching was first in Windows XP. And then when Apple or when Microsoft finally actually gets it into one of their operating systems, then the Apple users, of course, say, oh, look at that. They ripped off, Apple once again. And it was just a matter of Apple got the market first.
It's always the small guy.
Yeah.
It's not so uncommon that companies that are competing in the same arenas would come up with similar technologies even separately. You know, we can all kind of tell in some ways which way the market is going and what things are going to be important in the future. I think it'll be interesting to see how this finally plays out in the end. Will Apple just be able to redefine the scope of their patent, or will there be something else that happens?
Yeah, so will they definitely... be sending Microsoft a check on
right.
every iPod?
No, that would probably be painful for Apple, I'm sure, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Thank you very much for joining us today, Josh, Todd, Derek, and Brad. I appreciate your input here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. This podcast was brought to you by neowin.net and wincustomize.com. Support us by subscribing to us on iTunes, Odeo.com, or Podnova. Look for us every week at www.poweruser.tv.